Janet N. Gibb, the narrator of these tapes, died peacefully on the 3rd of April, 1974, aged 96 and 5 weeks approximately. One, two, three, four, five, six. It would seem appropriate to utilize the small remaining area of these tapes to record some personal impressions of their narrator, Miss Janet N. Gibb. Janet Gibb died early in the morning of the 3rd of April, 1974, aged 96 and a few weeks. She died peacefully and quietly, more faded away than anything else. She had celebrated her birthday party with a few old friends at a luncheon where champagne was served and hopes were expressed that all present might be there to see the telegram from the Queen on her 100th birthday. Shortly afterwards, she caught a cold, and a cough which put a strain on her heart, and she had to be removed to the hospital. Once in, the warmth, the snugness of the beds, meals brought to her, and every possible attention proved, I think, too big a contrast from the Spartan existence at the Grove. And it was as though she said her own nunc dimittis, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, her funeral service was on Sunday afternoon, the 7th of April. It's in St. Paul's Church, Ramsey, and she is buried in the new cemetery at Markild. Miss Gibb, when I knew her, was a small, aquiline lady, say 4'10" or 4'11" tall, hazel eyes, gray hair with a strong dark cast, and which perhaps age had rendered rather sparse to give a sort of close-cropped appearance, or what might have been in the 20s called an Eton crop. She wore metal-framed glasses, which, surprisingly enough, she removed when she wanted to read something, though for prolonged reading she then used a magnifying glass. As the tapes indicate, she had a remarkably strong voice and a wonderful sense of humor, an indication of the former and of her innate vitality may be gained from the fact that when I went to see her in hospital the very night before she died, when she really couldn't see very well, as I announced who I was and held her hand, her voice suddenly grew in strength, and she said, "I suppose you're planting your potatoes too, like the rest of them." Miss Gibb had undoubtedly been assisted in her long survival by the very extent of the work that occupied her every day of the week, and by the nature of her house, the Grove. She was too busy to be ill. She had too much to do to give way to advancing years. She certainly had too much to do to get sick and die. There were the hens to be fed. There were the ducks to be cared for. The cats, too. The whole house was hers, in which she slept alone. She had no servants, though she had some wonderfully kind neighbors who had known her all their lives and who gave her maximum companionship and support. Nevertheless, she had the housework to do, and this kept her going. In winter, the house was desperately cold. It had no form of central heating, and although the kitchen range went day and night, the fire was only lit in the drawing room or the dining room on occasions. In the summer, it was cool. The thick walls and the heavy shade from the surrounding trees gave it a sort of ice house feel. The Grove, which, as the tapes record, was originally Poplar Cottage, stands in the Balacarbery quarterland of Lazare at an approximate map reference of 445 by 995. The entrance is by a drive lined with daffodils and a duck pond. The front door has long since ceased to be used, and you go into the house by the yard door, surrounded by the birds, which are either a part of the domain, as the hens and the ducks, or those who recognize and have long since known that at a particular hour of each day, Miss Gibb would feed the hens and there would be pickings for them. Miss Gibb would say, "Don't leave your car there, Stirl, otherwise it will get very dirty." And very dirty it did get, if you forgot. You entered by the back door through a small annex or larder with the cellar steps off into the kitchen, which is where she mostly lived. It was quite a large room, with a table on the left, which might be laid for her meal, but certainly contained the correspondence which had to be dealt with, or the newspapers which she had not yet read. Centrally, there would be pots and pans, and especially the ingredients for making up the hen food. Overhead, on clothes horses, would hang laundry drying. Miss Gibb herself, if it were winter, would be wearing a hat and some sort of rough apron, which might almost have been Hessian, but which was not, and ankle-length boots for going out into the yard, together with mittens. You would get a wonderful greeting. In a couple of minutes, she would transform herself, and if your visit was of such a nature, you would be down the passageway to the dining room, there to state your business and have a glass of sherry. Up to the age of about 92, incredible though it may sound, she had bicycled from the Grove to St. Paul's Church every Sunday morning. This is a distance of about a mile, admittedly mostly downhill going, but conversely much of it uphill going back. She would sail into the marketplace on her bicycle, and I picture this tiny spare figure with a small, shallow-brimmed straw hat perched flat on her head. She never missed church. And when, after Alice's death, bicycling became too much of a good thing, she and a friend of hers, Mrs. Maud Peyton, who was actually 1 year older, were collected each Sunday in a taxi by Harry Crennel and taken back home after service. Sometime in the autumn of 1973, she herself gave 2 quite large luncheon parties at the Mitre Hotel to celebrate the marriage in South Africa of her youngest niece, Jenny, daughter of her brother. She was perfectly capable of playing the hostess, of requesting pre-luncheon drinks, of seating her guests, and of leading the conversation at the lunch table and paying the bill afterwards. There was nothing of the poor old lady about her, though she was only a tiny little lady. At her funeral, the final hymn was that wonderful shout of praise for the resurrection.